There was no security for Iraqis under the occupation, and that antagonized them, said Hallenbeck. People would read about every U.S. troop who dies, but we never heard about all the kidnappings, robbings, rapes of Iraqis. The average housewife was just terrified, and we didn't get that.
There has been much subsequent hand-wringing about the CPA's lack of strategic communication with the Iraqi people, Hallenbeck said. But, he continued, the CPA communicated some points all too well, if unconsciously. The Green Zone had security. It had services. It had the things that Iraqis wanted. A lot of people had no electricity, but could look across the river and see the CPA all lit up at night. And that was the way we really communicated.
In the fall and winter of 2003 through 4, he witnessed Iraqis beginning to turn against the occupation. I remember watching that turn. Iraqis were saying, "Not only do I not like these guys, they can't do anything for me, and they step on my dignity." The U.S. military fared no better in terms of winning hearts and minds. In November, only 11% of respondents had said they would feel safer if the U.S. forces left Iraq immediately. By January 2004, that figure had more than doubled to 28%. By April 2004, it would be 55%. As the pollsters put it in analyzing what they termed this substantial deterioration of image, Iraqis had come to see the U.S. military as part of the problem, a liability whose presence makes things more dangerous. By early 2004, we begin to smell like losers in Iraq, said analyst Patrick Clausen, because we can't deliver on personal security for Iraqis. There were robberies, kidnappings, carjackings. At that point, the military brass and the CPA were still pretty clueless. Then, Fallujah blew. It was a bad time. Major General Paul Eaton, who oversaw the training of Iraqi forces at that time, recalled, "This thing evolved in front of us, and each day it got incrementally worse until it exploded in late March." On Wednesday, March 24, the Army's 82nd Airborne turned over responsibility for Fallujah to the Marine Corps. Under the 82nd, Fallujah had been relatively quiet, in part because the 82nd had trod lightly in the city, not conducting intrusive patrols. John Abizade had said to me in November 2003 that we didn't want Fallujah to become a flashpoint, recalled General Swanick. Under the Marines, he pointedly noted, it did. The Marine view is different. Fallujah looked good, said Tulin, who commanded the 1st Marines, based just outside the city. It had a mayor, a police chief, all the trimmings, but it had termites. You always tread lightly, talking about the guys before you. But they, the 82nd Airborne, weren't out enough to do the termite inspections. He also was shocked during the turnover of command, when the army convoy he was in just pushed through an ambush outside the mayor's office, rather than launch a determined counterattack. If my guys did that, I'd have their ass. By Friday, just 3 days into Marine control, the city erupted. A group from Task Force 626, a successor to earlier elite organizations dedicated to killing or capturing high-level officials from the old regime, was hit by a bomb. Marine patrols into the city then engaged in a 36-hour-long series of firefights that left at least 15 Iraqis dead. The Marines were looking to engage both the people and the enemy, the first with friendship, the second with guns. "You want the fuckers to have a safe haven?" asked Lethen, the 1st Marine Division's operations officer, "or do you want to stir them up and get them out in the open?"